Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled,
so, have you ever felt like nothing, no, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy. I'm going to help you. I'm going to guide you through this very, very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today, so do not go anywhere. Pet loss and bereavement counselor and bikey. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. I am your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and they're also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones that are sitting right there next to you. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. Well, guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. So, we also talk about grief and loss here because many caregivers are grieving. Not only are the care receivers grieving, but the caregivers are grieving too because they're both going through loss. Usually the loss of freedom and sometimes health of their own when they're not taking care of themselves. And that can cause devastating effects. So, you know, the grief process automatically throws us into this thing that all of a sudden we're dealing with denial and guilt and, you know, bargaining and depression, and finally we're trying to get to acceptance. So hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. And especially today we're going to be talking about our pets and why it just seems like we grieve just as much when a pet dies as when a loved one dies, or maybe even more. Because, you know, those dogs are just faithful, and they're not like people. People judge you. My dog never judges me. My dog, I can be gone for like an hour, and when I see him, he acts like he hasn't seen me in years. I wish my kids would treat me that way, for gosh. Okay, enough of that. If this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and the show and my radio podcasts and my books and my videos and my blog by just going to my website, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com, or a shortcut would be DaveNass.com. That's Dave and the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. Now, that's the easy way to remember my address. Otherwise, it's the name of the show here, DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. So, when you go to my website, you will want to take my short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? And guess what? Just for doing that, I'm going to send you a free copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. This is a story about my amazing wife and my amazing story, because we're both amazing. So I'm told. I mean, I'm trying to be modest here. That, you know, that book is still getting rave reviews on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So please don't miss out on this very informative quiz that will assess where you are in the burnout process. And you get my book absolutely free just for doing that. Amazon is still selling it for almost $10, so it's really a great value. Now, I want to take this moment to thank my guests last week, Craig and Natasha Duswalt. Amazing interviews, speaking about surviving cancer and how they did it. If you do not hear this interview, go to that same link. It's right there at my website, DaveNass.com, and you can hear the podcast. Just go to the Uplifting Interviews tab on the website. So, let's see what we're going to do now. Oh, it's on iTunes as well. Don't want to forget to tell you that, for those of you Apple people who just do everything Apple. All right. Now I'm going to unmute my guests. Anne, are you there?
I am, and we have a little bit of background noise here, and my apologies for that. I thought the dogs were going to be very, very good and not bark while I was interviewing you. So you're going
well,
to hear a little
bit of background
noise. Well,
they do want to
say
hello also, you know, that's all. They're just saying hello. They're very instinctive, and they knew that you were coming on the air, and they just
and
wanted
they
to say hi.
And immediately thought it was imperative to bark so that everyone knew that I did indeed have canine companions, right?
Yes,
and
it does validate
thank you.
Thank you
so much for inviting me to the show, Dave.
Oh,
very
thank you so much for agreeing to the show, and thank you so much for patiently sitting through all of the introduction stuff for our first-time listeners. So, I wanted to just get... Let's start out, Anne, by just tell us who you are. I always like to have the guests introduce themselves because you do a much better job than I do. So just tell us a little something about yourself. Take about 2-3 minutes.
Sure. My name is Anne Beike, and I am a resident of Albuquerque, and I have a private practice. And I work exclusively with people who have lost or who are anticipating the loss of a pet. And I have been doing it for about 6 years. I take that back. I've been doing it for 8 years.
Time has absolutely flown by.
And it has been incredibly rewarding in so many ways. But as you were giving the intro, Dave, I was listening to what you were saying about caregiving and burnout and how important it is to take care of ourselves. So I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about that today and letting people know that there is that part of the caregiving that is incredibly important and also that we can't do the work that we need to do if we don't take care of ourselves.
Absolutely. That was a good introduction. I feel like I know you already. And you're from New Mexico.
Absolutely.
Albuquerque,
the land of enchantment, where the skies are blue and the sun shines most of the time.
Oh, I thought that was sunny California.
Well, that's right. It does there. You have an ocean. We don't, unfortunately.
Bummer. Well, I know you have beautiful deserts and dramatic sunsets in your beautiful deserts, right?
We do.
Okay. Well, now I'm jealous. Anyway, let's get started. What made you decide to do this work? I mean, did you lose pets of your own and you grieved and you says, you know what, I can help people? I mean, what happened? Tell me the story.
Well, absolutely, Dave. I had lost, as an adult, I had lost several pets myself, dogs. And then I had a golden retriever who I had rescued, and she was about 15 years old at the time, which is very old for a golden retriever.
Yeah.
And she was ill, and I was caregiving. And I had one of those moments that I know that you have had and many of your listeners have had where you say, aha, this is what I have to do. I looked at her, and I said, I just cannot bear the thought of losing her. I know I'm going to have a lot of pain. I know it's going to hurt. And then I realized that there were other people who were in that same situation, that they had nowhere to turn. And we all have our circle of friends and family who can support us when we have tough times. But the fact is that we oftentimes need to go outside of that circle of people that we know. And it was at that moment when I looked at her and said, she is not going to be with me much longer, and I want to be able to help other people through this because it's incredibly difficult, and oftentimes people just don't know where to turn.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And in fact, you know, when it was first suggested that I have you as a guest and you know, Cynthia told me you were a grief counselor for pets, I said, what? You know, I didn't get it. And I should get it because we've lost a pet just a couple of years ago, and we've gone through the grief. You know, my wife cried for a month but I just didn't put two and two together that, yeah, you know, it's probably worse because, like I was saying in the intro, dogs are so unconditional in their love. And I think my dog is my best friend because nobody else accepts me for who I am, doesn't care, you know, the bad habits and the quirks that I have. And I just love my dog, and my dog loves me, and that's the way it should be, right?
That's absolutely how it should be. And people who have pets, be it a dog, be it a cat, be it a bird, be it a rabbit, whatever it is, whatever that animal companion gives to you, you talk about the unconditional love, they give us that, but they give us so much more. I always like to say they're a little ray of sunshine, and I like to just tuck that in my pocket and carry that with me wherever I go because they just bring so much joy to us in so many ways. So the fact is that when we lose them, whether it is an unexpected death, whether it is a death that we are anticipating because of illness, because of age, it usually, I think of it as a gut punch. It literally takes the wind out of our sails.
Really does.
We are just beside ourselves. And people move through their grief differently. We all do, just as we move through grief differently with our pets, with our with parents, with siblings, with friends. We all have a process.
Wow, you sound like a real counselor, and you are a real counselor, right? You went to school.
I'm a real counselor, Dave. I am. We have to be licensed to be a counselor here in this state, and I am licensed. I keep up on my continuing education credits every year, and I pride myself in learning what I can about people, about the connection between people and their animal companions, because we know how important it is. There's been a lot of studies that have been done on the connection between pets and people. And, for instance, I want to use this as an example, that people who are recovering from surgeries show a faster recovery from surgeries when they have a pet with them. You talked a little bit about how your pet, your dog, is totally accepting of you. I always like to say, it doesn't matter how bad I look when I get up in the morning or how grumpy I am, my pet always makes me feel okay.
Yeah, and it's like he knows how to get you out of your grumpiness, too.
Pretty powerful stuff.
He'll go grab the ball and throw it at you and say, okay, come on, time to play ball.
Right. Snap out of it. Come on. Right. And in my case, I have, and the listeners will see probably the picture of myself and my two dogs. Those dogs have both are both deceased. And Goldie is the golden retriever who I spoke of earlier, who really gave me, that was the sign that I was supposed to do what I'm doing. But I have a mixed breed dog, a lab, who is about 10 years old, and I always he just brings a smile to my face every morning when he carries his Elsie the cow stuffed toy into my room and greets me. So, yes, they just have a way of making life a whole lot more palatable for us. So It's a given that when we lose them, we're going to be pretty sad.
Yes, and I bet Elsie has a little squeaker inside of her too, right?
Elsie has a little squeaker inside of her, Dave. You're absolutely right. And actually, he's always amazed when he squeaks that little squeaker because he forgets that it's there, and it's like, oh, wow, she squeaks. So, yes, I have the joy, Dave, of talking to so many people that have had such incredible relationships with their animal companions. And it it's very heartening to hear that. It's just so wonderful to know that. But at the same time, I understand why they're in such pain when they lose that pet.
Yeah. You know, I'm having so much fun talking to you. I got to remember I have a script, and I've got to stay on the script, or we're never going to get anywhere. But I'm sure you have had reactions when people find out what you do. Would you consider it odd to see a counselor because of a person mourning a loss of a pet? I mean, how do people react to that kind of thing?
Well, of course, I wouldn't consider it odd, being that that is my given profession right now. But other people have said to me, "Oh, you do what? I never have heard of that before." And kind of what you said earlier, Dave, was that you had heard that I do pet loss and bereavement counseling, and that seemed unusual. But the fact is that there are a lot of people around the United States, and I'm not familiar internationally with what is happening, but certainly in the United States, there are a lot of people who incorporate this into, they may have a different practice, so they incorporate that into their practice. In terms of someone feeling odd about contacting a counselor, I've had many people that have said that. I feel so odd contacting you because I've lost my pet. And my first question about that is why? And some of that is what society says about,
right,
oh, it's just a pet.
Mm-hmm.
Just go get another one.
Get over it.
Get over it. Right.
That's
exactly
true. That's true.
Yeah.
And those are the people who have never had a pet or have never had a relationship with a pet. They just don't get it, you know.
Right.
And
right.
I'm not a cat person. Now, you either have to be a cat person or you're not a cat person. And, you know, cats never got along with me as a child. And I used to have nightmares of these cats, like, clawing me. And because, you know, they know if you don't like them. And so if you touch them, they'll scratch you. So
they have that sense. Yes,
and I love dogs. I mean, I can go up to strange dogs who people are afraid to go up to, and it's like, hey, you know, he's not going to bite me. I know this guy, you know, and
right.
I just start petting him, and he just, you know, you can tell the look on their face, I think.
You can, and their body language, of course.
Yeah.
Those are all things that are really important, too, is to just be aware of a dog or a cat's body language. But,
yeah.
Dave, what kind of a dog do you have?
Well, we have a little one, but I would love a golden retriever. But my wife, you know, she likes little dogs. So he's a mix between a Yorkie and a terrier, and just the cutest thing in the world. And my daughter got another one after we lost. We kind of all shared custody of this dog because they were living with us at the time. She was going through a divorce. And so, you know, two families were grieving the loss of this pet.
Right.
And my wife said, I don't want another one again. But my daughter, you know, after about 3 or 4 months, because the kids wanted one, kids seem to get over it quicker than adults do. And so they had moved out by that time. They bought another dog, very similar to the first one. And so she would occasionally ask us to babysit, and that kind of started it. But now my wife's hooked, you know.
Yes, of course.
She's definitely hooked. So let me ask you, does the loss of an animal companion affect us the same way as the loss of a person might affect us, you think?
I suppose that varies from individual to individual. Each person is unique in their own way as to how they accept loss. But oftentimes what I hear from people is, oh, boy, you know, I lost my dad 2 years ago, or I lost a grandparent, or I had a recent loss of someone I knew, and this is so much more difficult than the previous loss. And,
right,
you know, it is, if we're expecting a loss of an elderly parent or a grandparent, I do think that is different than losing a pet, say, to a sudden death. Very, very different. And everybody's reaction to it is different, but it could be a lot more traumatic than what we would have ever anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the first time I had a loss as an adult, I was so profoundly affected by it. I had nothing to compare it to, first of all. I just didn't have really any idea what was going to happen to me. And that was probably back in the 80s, in the late 80s, and I looked all over for a book on pet loss, and I found a book that was probably about a half inch thick, and it was very helpful, but I just didn't realize it was going to affect me the way that it affected me. So everybody is different. And in terms of it affecting us the same way, well, it might, and it might not. It might also be that we've had some recent losses of some humans in our lives, and it is compounded by the loss of a pet, and we're reliving some of those losses. Maybe we didn't move through and really have closure of that loss.
Tell us. And about the services you provide, because, I mean, you've got this business, you've got a website, you've got all the stuff to help people who are grieving, right? So tell us what you
Sure, Dave. I provide individual counseling with folks, and I generally go to their home. I find that they're more comfortable in their home, and they can show me pictures of where their dog or cat or bird used to sleep, all of those kinds of things. I also do phone consultation or counseling with people. So if you have listeners who are interested in doing a session with me over the phone, I am happy to do that also. And in Albuquerque, I also offer pet loss groups. So I have three groups a month, and those are what are called open groups. So people can come to a group and maybe not come to the next one. And the groups are somewhat limited in the amount of people that are there. I feel like that always gives people an opportunity to really share what their loss was and to hear what other people are going through and to also to just get some pearls of wisdom that they can take with them when they leave when they leave the group. I also go into vet clinics, vet care clinics, and hospitals, vet hospitals, to talk with their staff a little bit about loss. And that's to also introduce my services to them, but also talk with them about the kinds of things that might make it, I don't want to say easier, because it's never easy to work with folks who have lost a pet, but to be able to be more comfortable and to give the encouragement and support to people who have lost a pet.
Wow, a doctor who still makes house calls. Imagine that.
Yes. Well, I can't say that I have my PhD, so I can't call myself a doctor, but yes, I do make house calls.
Well, even a counselor makes house calls. That's pretty amazing. So what are some things that I can do to help me move through the loss of an animal companion? Just some practical tips and advice.
Sure. Really, in terms of practical kinds of things, just the biggest thing I really feel like is to be gentle on yourself. We are so good at making ourselves feel guilty about the things that we should have, could have, would have done differently. And the fact is that we don't know when we're going to lose our pets. As a rule, we don't know that this is the date that it's going to happen unless we have scheduled a euthanasia for our pets.
Yeah.
So we have probably worked through some of that, and that we know that it's time to let our pet go, and we have made an appointment with the vet, or we've called the vet to come to the house. And there's a case of the doctor does make house calls. There are a number of vets here that do in-home euthanasias. We need to use our support networks. And it is true that most of us have friends, we have family that we can count on. sometimes we don't. And if we don't, find the resources that are available. There's a really great website that I want to talk about, Dave, that's called the Association for Pet Loss and Bereavement. It's APLB.org. And they do a number of online chat rooms where you can go in and talk about, and when I say talk about, you do it via keyboard, so you see everyone's conversation.
Sure.
But it is a nonprofit group. They do not charge for their chat rooms, and they are just a great wealth of support for you. They also have a couple of groups for people who are anticipating the loss of a pet. So that's a great support, especially if you're in an area where perhaps you can't get to a counselor who is skilled in working with someone who has lost a pet, or there are no pet loss groups.
Mm-hmm.
I would really advise people to take a look at what kinds of things are available through your local humane organization, a humane society, ASPCA, or a local nonprofit pet law pet group, animal welfare group.
Yep.
They a lot of times offer resources.
You know, Ann, you're so right about what you're saying about guilt, because the reason our dog got killed by a car, and it was awful. I mean, somebody called and says, oh, you know, your dog just got hit by a car. I didn't do it. So I drove down there, and you know, they had put the dog in a plastic bag because it was all bloody and everything. And I had to bury it. I mean, it was just awful. And yet this dog kept getting out of our yard. And so my wife said, the reason he's getting out of the yard is because he needs to be spayed. He's looking for stuff, you know. Go get him spayed. She was telling me this for 4 months. And for whatever reason, you know, either I didn't agree with her or I put it off. And so now I'm feeling guilty. Gosh, this dog would still be alive if I would have gone and had him spayed, or if I would have, you know, because we tried to find out where he was getting out, but he was sneaky, you know. So, you know, maybe if I would have spent more time trying to figure out where he was getting out, you know, so it's all my fault, you know. And, of course,
we kick ourselves. We blame ourselves for all of the things that we coulda, shoulda, woulda done. And that's, you know, that really keeps us from healing. And it's hard. I got to say that I have heaped plenty of guilt upon myself many times. And I see clients who do it too. And we just have to work through those kinds of things. But I do really feel like there are many lessons that we can learn after we've had a loss. And, you know, we hate to say, well, oh, gosh, I lost this pet, and that's what's teaching me this lesson, and that's how I had to learn. I hope that we're not saying that to ourselves, but rather we're saying, I made a mistake. I made a mistake, and I regret that, and I will learn from that, and these are the things that I'll do differently.
Yeah, and there's so many similarities, you know, because I'm the caregiver's caregiver, and I counsel caregivers, and so many caregivers go through guilt, and there's a whole chapter in my book about guilt, and how, you know, you can distinguish deserved guilt from undeserved guilt, because a lot of caregivers are receiving undeserved guilt, which it doesn't matter if it's deserved or undeserved, it's the same symptoms. You know, you're gonna kill yourself by just living in guilt. Some people live in guilt for years. Some people live in guilt the rest of their lives, you know, and it's not necessary.
And it's not necessary, and it's not healthy. And if we're bringing another pet into our lives, that other pet needs our full attention and deserves our full attention. And we just can't go on beating ourselves up forever about the things that we maybe had no control over. And we learn certainly from our experiences. And I hope that's one thing that we can carry forward is, what did I learn from this? How can I do this differently? How can I be good to myself and gentle on myself? Because we don't, as you say, undeserved and deserved. What is it?
Guilt.
Yeah.
Anyway, you brought up a good point, because one reason why I was totally against getting another dog, like, kids want to do it like 2 weeks after. I says, come on, the dog's not even, you know, cold in the grave yet, and you want to replace him? I says, what if I died? You know, next week you go get another grandpa? Oh, well, he's gone. You know, we're going to miss him, but hey, he's replaceable. I says, listen, you're disrespecting the memory of our dog. You have to wait a proper amount of time and mourn him, you know, and this and that. And you know, if you replace the pet too soon, are you in danger of feeling guilt for that, saying, my dog is probably rolling over in his grave, saying, how could you do that so quickly, you know? I mean,
right.
Is that just crazy talk, or is this genuine?
That's a good point, Dave. And when you talk about your kids, they were able to move through that a little bit differently than you did. For any number of reasons. One, you're an adult, and the other, they're children. But I feel as if what we're doing is not necessarily replacing that pet, but we are bringing another pet into our life. We can never replace that pet, because it's irreplaceable. The personality is different. They're going to be a different animal completely. But what you also said was incredibly important is it disrespectful? Whenever I have someone ask me that, do you think it's time for me to get another pet? I always say, if you're asking that question, it's probably not time. And there is no harm in waiting until we are sure that we are ready to bring another pet into our lives. It's that simple. The fact is that if you go to a shelter to adopt, there are always going to be pets there that need a home. There are always going to be. Always. So give yourself time to mourn. Give yourself time to be in a place where you are happy again, where you feel as if you can give all of your time and energy to this new pet, because this new pet really deserves that. And that's really giving also the pet that you just lost. That's being respectful to your pet that you lost also. And your pet would want that. I always say your pet would want you to be ready to bring another four-legged creature or a bird into the house or whatever it might be.
Yeah. You know, you really struck a nerve. I'm starting to tear up and cry, and I don't know why. Wow. What do you think's going on in my head?
It's very powerful what our pets leave us and what they give us when they're here and the gifts that they leave us when they go, when they cross over to that, they cross over the Rainbow Bridge. You know, that's an incredible poem that people talk about, and that we want to be able to cross that Rainbow Bridge and that our pets will be there. And everybody has their own beliefs about whether they will see their pets in their next life. I always like to believe that my pets are always here with me in spirit. But just the emotions that this brings up tells us once again that they are just an incredible part of our lives. So we also deserve to grieve them, and we also deserve to have that closure. We also deserve to memorialize them in whatever way that we think we want to memorialize them, and we deserve to be good to ourselves when we lose them. Not be cruel to ourselves because we've lost them, because Dave, I tell you, everybody's going to, this is not new to you, everybody's going to leave this earth, right?
Yep.
And our pets leave way, way too soon.
Yep. Well, you know, I read the Bible every day. I'm very familiar with it. And the Bible talks about animals in heaven. You know, it talks about there will be a day when the lion can lay down with the lamb. And so,
yes.
I mean, if wild animals are going to be in heaven or on earth, you know, when God brings, you know, heaven down to earth, the New Jerusalem, then certainly I can't even imagine him not bringing back the spirits of the pets themselves, you know, maybe with new bodies, because we're certainly going to have new bodies. So if you ask me, I say, yeah, we will see them again when we go to heaven. So,
yes.
But that's, I believe the Bible says that, but that's me. Another question. Now, caregiving for a pet, kinds of caregiving is there, and how is that similar to or different from caregiving for a human? Obviously, you mentioned when your pet was sick. I get that, you know, and mm-hmm. I have a friend who is a paraplegic, and he has a service animal,
uh-huh.
and so they are very valuable. They do, you know, tasks. They can open doorknobs. They can, you know, for blind people, they can guide them and so on. So service animals, you know, I certainly get that. You need to care for them. You need to feed them, et cetera. So explain the difference between caregiving for a pet and caregiving for a human.
Well, I'm not sure that it's a whole lot different other than the fact that our pets cannot talk to us. And in the case of knowing whether a pet is in pain or not, I always recommend that people, as they are caregiving a pet, to stay in close contact with their vet to find out what some of the signs are going to be. So, for instance, if someone is caregiving a human who has Alzheimer's or who has Parkinson's, well, we know that there is a routine of caring, giving medication, of feeding, that kind of thing. That isn't a whole lot different than when you have a dog or cat who maybe is in renal failure, and you have to make sure that they get the right amount of fluids, that mm-hmm. they are getting any kind of medication that they need. Our pets, the one thing about them is they so often can't say that they hurt. And we have to look for signs. It might be a panting for, in the case of a dog, it might be mm-hmm. for maybe some tremors. Maybe they might be shaking. Maybe they may be vocalizing that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of caregiving, it's always good to talk with your vet, learn as much as you can. The great thing about the internet right now is that we can go online and find out everything we can about our pets and what the signs might be if they have cancer. What kinds of things do we need to begin to look for as far mm-hmm. as them failing? Also, in many locales, and I know it at least in Albuquerque, we do have vets here that help with hospice care. And hospice care might be something as, when I say as simple, I don't know how simple this really is, but it's pain medication. It's pain medication. And you're doing palliative care,
right,
really, at that point, because you know that your pet is not going to survive this bout with cancer, mm-hmm. and that at some point soon you'll have to make that decision to euthanize the pet, most likely. There mm-hmm. also is a quality of life scale that you can go online, and the name of the person, it's a vet who has designed this quality of life scale, and it is, here are the things that you're going to check off at 1 through 5, and this is the 5 that my pet cannot get up and move anymore. The quality of life scale is going to tell you when you need to make that decision to euthanize. So in terms of caregiving versus humans versus pets. Our pets may not be able to tell us. Of course, if we're working with a human, they may not be able to tell us that they're in pain also.
Yeah, but, and you talk about the negative. Now, I know with my dog, let me just talk about the positive there. As a caregiver, because I'm trying to say, okay, I'm my dog's caregiver, because I never thought of that before. You know, I need to play with him because he has this need to play. And then I need to take him for walks because he has this need for exercise. He has this need to go and smell fire hydrants and you know, just to make him happy because, you know, he gives so much. And yet it's so easy to neglect their needs. They want a companion as well. They're a companion to us, but they want us to be a companion to them. You know, choosing the kind of food to give them. You know, some people feed their dog table foods and then they get – you know, fat, and then they start developing, you know, diseases, et cetera, because, you know, you are what you eat, and so on.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand that caregiving a pet is a lot of responsibility. You know, you've got all these duties, all these responsibilities.
Right, and lifelong. So, hence that when you bring a animal companion into your household, it's a lifelong commitment. And Dave, I have some experience working in animal welfare also, and so I saw a lot of the kinds of situations that were where animals were relinquished for any number of reasons that might just astound us.
Right.
But when we make a decision to bring a pet into our household, it is for life. We know that there are sometimes situations where people have to relinquish a pet, and one of my dogs that I had adopted, his human companion went into the nursing home, and nobody in the family could take that dog. So here he landed up in the shelter. So we are the caregivers of our pets, our animal companions, forever. And that means the not so easy task of seeing them leave this world in a painful way.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do the best that we can, and there are so many resources that are out there, and I would just suggest that if people are in that situation where they are caregiving a pet, to talk to a vet, get online, see what you can find out, see if there is a local animal welfare agency that might be able to help you and guide you and get the support of other people too.
Great. And listen,
others who have been in a similar situation.
I can't believe how fast this time is going. We have to take another break and we will be back and we'll talk about how a pet can be a companion to a caregiver and a care receiver. So don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years. After she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Ann Beike, grief counselor for pets, pet owners. Hey, there's an idea. Do you counsel pets too, or just their owners?
just their humans. Yes. Okay. I leave that to the other piece to all of those experts out there on animal behavior, and there are some great people out there that can help, really help folks who are having maybe being challenged by their pets and might want to do something such as relinquish it to a shelter because it has some wild behaviors. But there's always help available.
I heard, I don't know if this is a joke or not, but I heard that there are actual like dog psychiatrists. If your dog is acting weird and he looks like he's mentally troubled, that somehow they can help them. I don't know. Anyway,
well,
what I was
definitely behaviorist. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely behaviorist. And you know, there is medication that can help to calm pets, also an antidepressant and to calm them down. So it's a very huge part of our society nowadays. The fact that our pets are so much a part of our lives, we need services for them.
Yeah.
And hence, when we lose them. When we lose them, we're looking to the service of a counselor.
Yes. Now, Anne, as both of us know, caregivers are prone to burnout. They're caring for their loved one, and they don't have hardly any time to themselves. They don't have friends. It seems like all their friends have abandoned them. They can't remember the last time they went to a movie. They can't remember the last time they went to a restaurant for a healthy meal. They probably don't eat right. They don't sleep right. Tell me how you think a pet can be of help to avoiding caregiver burnout.
That's a great question, Dave. And I feel like if you have a pet in your household, and you are also caregiving, that just all of the things that you talked about, going out to the movies, maybe it's just getting out with that dog, with that cat, and just being away and giving yourself a little bit of time. Just the art of having a dog or cat, whatever, next to you and stroking it, petting it, talking to it is comforting also. It could help us drop our blood pressure.
Sure, someone to vent to.
So that's something to certainly consider is that pet may help to guide you as you are going through the caregiving process of caregiving a human.
Right. And how can a pet help a care receiver that would maybe take some of the responsibilities off of the caretaker? Can a pet actually substitute some aspects of a care receiver needing care from a caregiver? Can it be a break to the caregiver to give the care receiver a pet?
Dave, you mentioned earlier about people who have a service dog, and it's generally a dog, who might help them with some daily activities. And that is certainly important. And that is one of the things that allows people with a disability to be much more independent, is to have a dog to be able to go into a room, turn on a light, pick up an item, help with any number of things. So sometimes that may be incredibly beneficial for a person to have a service animal. Sometimes, depending on what the disability is, maybe it's not something that is that they can do. Maybe their living situation is such that they can't. So, again, it would probably depend on that person's particular situation. But certainly they could probably take some of those chores that a caregiver might be doing, and the service animal might be doing some of those things. But a service animal is generally with a person all the time. So a caregiver might be coming in to provide some other kinds of services, such as bathing and that sort of thing, that clearly a service animal can only do specific things.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if that were the case, then I would have my dogs making my meals for me. And I haven't figured out how to do that yet. So
you haven't,
no.
Well, I'm thinking that most care receivers suffer from boredom, and if they had maybe a cat or a parakeet or a dog, little tiny lap dog that always sat on their lap or something, that they were just allowed to be adored to, you know, that maybe that could take care of some of the boredom. Because when a care receiver is bored, they kind of make life miserable for the care receiver. Oh, can you do this? Oh, can you do that? Can you get me this? Can you get me that? But if they're not bored, if they have an object of their affection, so to speak, then, you know, they're more content and they're more self-sufficient and they're more inclined to not complain, which a lot of care receivers love to complain. And they're more inclined to just be happy. I mean, yeah.
And that is a good point, because you are giving all of your affection to this particular animal companion. We talk about how important pets are to people who are older, to elderly folks, and how they just adore them, how important it is. And we're seeing that certainly in a lot of assisted living, a lot of nursing homes, a lot of retirement centers where people are allowed to bring in their pets, or they're having pets come in. People with pets are coming in to visit. So I guess I never really thought of that question, Dave, and it's a good one to pose. Is it an appropriate situation, I guess, also is the other consideration. Is it appropriate to get a four-legged companion animal for that person? Do we have the level of care for that pet also? You know, can somebody get out and walk the dog? If it's somebody who is in a wheelchair, can they walk with the dog? And that's, you know, a great opportunity for both the pet and the person to be outside. But we also want to keep in mind the amount of care that we do have to give the pet. And the fact that somebody has to clean up after it, litter box, clean up the yard, give it food, and is the caregiver going to be doing that, or is the person receiving care able to do that? So always a consideration. We want to make sure that a pet is in a home where it is loved, and there's no doubt in my mind that that this would be beneficial for somebody who has a lot of love to give.
Right.
And wants to have that little dog or cat on its lap and is able to give it lots of love and attention.
Yeah, so on a case-by-case basis, they can make decisions.
Absolutely.
Is it the same grief process when a pet dies, you know, the denial and the anger and the bargaining and the depression and the acceptance? Do you think people go through that process just like when a person dies?
I do. I think there are a lot of the same stages that we go through. There's a great book by Alan Wolfelt that is called When Your Pet Dies. And one of the things that he talks about, which I have just thought is so true is when we talk about acceptance in the process of the Kubler-Ross process of the stages of grief, he talks about reconciling your grief. And I really think that this is really a good point. I'm going to read it real quick. He said, reconciliation is a term I find more appropriate for what occurs as you work to move forward in life without the physical presence of your pet. And with reconciliation comes a renewed sense of energy and confidence, an ability to acknowledge the reality of the death, and a capacity to become reinvolved in the activities of living. Now, it's really probably not so different when we lose a human in our lives. We reconcile that. We get, and it is acceptance too, but I like this reconciliation that he talks about, is that we are reconciling the fact that that the pet is no longer with us, and we then become involved in the activities of living. And I just think it's really so beautiful, but so many of these stages, yes, are the same, that we are angry because we've lost a pet, that our pet is gone, that we are in denial. How can it be?
Yep.
How can it be that we have lost our pet? And bargaining. I would give anything to have my pet back.
Well, Anne, I can't believe how fast this hour has gone by. This is one of the fastest interviews I've ever done.
It sure has been a fast hour, hasn't it?
And I could do another hour with you. We'll probably have to have you back for part two.
I hope so, Dave. This has been quite enjoyable.
Yes, you've certainly expanded my mind to the concept of pet counseling and pet grief. And thank you so much. Any last comments that we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about? And then tell the people how they can contact you to learn more about you and your services, et cetera.
Sure. I would guess that one of the things that I would say in just closing is just to look for the resources that you might have among you, among your circle of friends, your family. Seek out a counselor if you are able to do that. Check with your local humane association or society and see what resources they have. There's a wealth of information on the Internet. The Association for Pet Loss and Bereavement, APLB.org, is a great place to start. They have lots of books and great chat lines also. And love and care and just hug your pet every day and know that they are an integral part of your life. That's nothing new to tell people. But love them and know that they are returning that love in the way that they do that. And Dave, if folks want to get in touch with me, they can certainly call me at 505-265-3087, or they can get me online at petlosscounselor.com.
Wow, thank you so much. And this is a counselor who makes house calls and gives out her personal phone number. Wow.
thank you so much, again. Dave. It's been such a joy to talk to you.
Oh, it's been my joy. Thank you so much for allowing me to interview. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in today. Remember, every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time and also Saturdays at 3:30 Pacific Standard Time, don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts, including this one, and that you can listen to them on our website, davenass.com, or davethecaregiverscaregiver.com. Both will get you there. And also on iTunes. The links are on our website. By the way, when you are on my site, don't forget to take the quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? Even Pet Burnout, so that you can get your free copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next week, may God richly bless you. Goodbye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.